For a few moments he was silent, then he raised a finger. "I think I have a solution. It's quite simple, in fact it's perfect. I'll bring Lydia in here."
"What?
Into the house?"
"Yes,
into this very room. I can put Hamish in his basket by the fire, and Lydia and I can occupy the sofa."
"Marvellous.
What could be nicer on a cold winter's night? Cheap, too. But, Triss, how about Siegfried's lecture this morning? What if he comes home early and catches the two of you here?" Tristan lit a woodbine and blew out an expansive cloud.
"Not a chance.
You worry about such tiny things, Jim. He's always late when he goes to Broughton. There's no problem at all."
"Well, please yourself," I said, "but I think you're asking for trouble. Anyway, shouldn't you be doing a bit of bacteriology? The exams are getting close."
He smiled seraphically through the smoke.
"Oh, I'll have a quick read through it all in good time."
I couldn't argue with him there. I always had to go over a thing about 6 times before it finally sank in, but with his brain, the quick read would no doubt suffice. I went out on my call. I got back about 8 o'clock, and as I opened the front door, my mind was far from Tristan. Ted Binn's car wasn't responding to my treatment, and I was beginning to wonder if I was on the right track. When in doubt, I liked to look the subject up, and the books were on the shelves in the sitting room. I hurried along the passage and threw open the door. For a moment, I stood there bewildered, trying to reorientate my thoughts. The sofa was drawn close to the bright fire, the atmosphere was heavy with cigarette smoke and the scent of perfume, but there was nobody to be seen. The most striking feature was the long curtain over the French window. It was wafting slowly downwards, as though some object had just hurtled through it at great speed. I trotted over the carpet and peered out into the dark garden. From somewhere in the gloom I heard a scuffling noise, a thud, and a muffled cry. Then there was a pitter-patter, followed by a shrill yelping. I stood for some time listening. Then, as my eyes grew accustomed to the darkness, I walked down the long path under the high brick wall to the yard at the foot. The yard door was open, as were the big double doors into the back lane. But there was no sign of life. Slowly I retraced my steps to the warm oblong of light at the foot of the tall old house. I was about to close the French window when I heard a stealthy movement and an urgent whisper.
"Is that you, Jim?"
"Triss, where the hell have you sprung from?" The young man tiptoed past me into the room and looked around him anxiously.
"It was you, then, not Siegfried?"
"Yes, I've just come in." He flopped on the sofa and sank his head in his hands.
"Oh, damn!
I was just lying here a few minutes ago with Lydia in my arms, at peace with the world. Everything was wonderful. Then I heard the front door open."
"But you knew I was coming back?"
"Yes, and I'd given you a shout, but for some reason I thought, God help us, it's Siegfried. It sounded like his step in the passage."
"Then what happened?"
He churned his hair around with his fingers.
"Oh, I panicked.
I was whispering lovely things into Lydia's ear, then the next second I grabbed her, threw her off the couch and out of the French window.
I heard a thud."
"Yes, that was Lydia falling into the rockery. And then some sort of high-pitched cries." He sighed and closed his eyes. "That was Lydia in the rose bushes. She doesn't know the geography of the place, poor lass."
"Gosh, Triss," I said,
"I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have burst in on you like that. I was thinking of something else."
He rose wearily and put a hand on my shoulder.
"It's not your fault, Jim, not your fault. You did warn me."
He reached for his cigarettes.
"I don't know how I'm going to face that girl again. I just chucked her out into the lane and told her to beat it home with all speed. She must think I'm stone balmy."
He gave a hollow groan. I tried to be cheerful.
"Oh, you'll get round her again. You'll have a laugh about it later."
But he wasn't listening. His eyes, wide with horror, were staring past me. Slowly he raised a trembling finger and pointed towards the fireplace. His mouth worked for a few seconds before he spoke.
"Christ, Jim! It's gone!" he gasped.
For a moment I thought the shock had deranged him.
"Gone? What's gone?"
"The bloody dog! He was there when I dashed outside, right there!" I looked down into the empty basket and a cold hand clutched at me.
"Oh, no. He must have got out through the open window. We're in trouble!"
We rushed into the garden and searched in vain. We went back for torches and searched once more, prowling around the yard and back lane, shouting the little dog's name with diminishing hope. After 10 minutes we trailed back into the brightly lit room and stared at each other. Tristan was the first to voice our thoughts. What do we tell Miss Westerman when she calls?
I shook my head. My mind fled from the thought of informing that lady that we had lost her dog.
Just at that moment, the front doorbell pealed in the passage, and Tristan almost leapt in the air.
Oh, God, he quavered. That'll be her now. Go and see her, Jim. Tell her it was my fault, anything you like, but I daren't face her.
I squared my shoulders, marched over the long stretch of tiles, and opened the door. It wasn't Miss Westerman. It was a well-built platinum blonde, and she glared at me angrily.
Where's Tristan?
She rasped in a voice which told me we had more than one tough female to deal with tonight.
Well, he's, Oh, I know he's in there.
As she brushed past me, I noticed she had a smear of oil on her cheek and her hair was sadly disarranged. I followed her into the room, where she stalked up to my friend.
Look at my bloody stockings, she burst out. They're ruined!
Tristan peered nervously at the shapely legs.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lydia. I'll get you another pair. Honestly, love, I will.
You'd better, you booger, she replied. And don't love me. I've never been so insulted in my life.
What did you think you were playing at?
It was all a misunderstanding. Let me explain. Tristan advanced on her with a brave attempt at a winning smile, but she backed away.
Keep your distance, she said frigidly.
I've had enough of you for one night. She swept out, and Tristan leant his head against the mantelpiece.
The end of a lovely friendship, Jim.
Then he shook himself.
But we've got to find that dog. Come on.
I set off in one direction, and he went in the other. It was a moonless night of impenetrable darkness, and we were looking for a jet-black dog. I think we both knew it was hopeless, but we had to try.